Hello and welcome to the Bikepacking Podcast. My name's Mike Rain and I've got a very, very special show for you today because we've got one of our top YouTubers, top bikepacking YouTubers today. I've been fortunate enough to get a conversation with Alan Boardman, who many of you will have been watching on his YouTube adventures. And there's something like nearly 3,000 followers, and some of his big videos have gone to over 30,000. So I'm quite sure if you're bikepacking in the UK, you've discovered Alan Boardman. If not, do so, because his films are inspirational. Alan, thank you for taking the time to talk to us on the Bikepacking Podcast. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you for inviting me along. Yeah, I'm very, very good today. Thank you.
Great. So kind of the tables are turned, aren't they, this time? You normally have to make things up to say to the camera, but I'm going to ask you some questions. So we'll give Alan a grilling.
Uh-oh.
And the first question is a fairly obvious one, isn't it? Is why bikepacking? How did you get into it? How did it get started? It's a bit of an esoteric pastime, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it all stems from my background was always in mountain bikes. Sort of doing a lot of silly street trials and stuff like that when I was younger, watching Dirt that was released with MB UK all those years ago on VHS, which a lot of youngsters don't know what it actually is. So yeah, it kind of like escalated from there. I'd done a bigger and bigger mountain biking trips, and then I started going to French Alps and Morzine, Leger, Whistler, and done a tour around Whistler, like downhill and with some old school names, but at the time very very recent names, you know, Tyler Claston and Chris Glue and stuff like that. So it was really, really good fun. And then eventually I moved over to not doing anything whatsoever and got very lazy and just sat there. I decided that I wanted to start riding again and I wanted to cover 100 miles in a day, so just got a road bike, started riding. 6 weeks later, tried to ride 100 miles and rode 107 miles because I rode the wrong way for 7 miles. It's a theme that carried on from there. And got exactly 100 miles in and absolutely fell to bits. And just barely got home. So the rides got bigger and bigger, like North Coast 500, 200 miles in a day. And then all of a sudden it was like, well, what do we do next? And I was like, okay, 300 miles in a day. And I thought, where do you start? Starting to get a bit boring on the roads, and decided to take up self-supported riding. Didn't necessarily come that smooth though, the transition, because I was looking on the internet and I seen a picture of a guy, didn't know who he was at the time. He had a race light with Reynolds deep section carbon wheels, loads of Apajora bags all over it. Turns out it was Mike Hall. I didn't know who he was at the time. And I was like, why has he got all these bags all over this super lightweight bike? Don't get it. So I spoke to my mate. I was like, John, what's going on here? Why has he got all of this? He goes, right, come around for a brew. That was the most expensive brew that I ever had, because he was like, that, my friend, is bike packing. I'm like, you are? So yeah, he told me all about it, loaned me a load of kit, went for a local camp out under the stars, froze all night. I had the worst sleeping bag in the world, and it was incredible. It was such a good time, and I was like, I want some of this. So it started from there, and then took to the long distance side of it, because the more I read about Michael, the more he inspired me. And I was like, oh, I'm sure I can ride it 100 miles in a day on the mountain bike in the Lake District. So my first attempt to doing gen ride, I'd done it in sub 24 hours and managed 100 miles nonstop. But that's where sleep monsters came. And I was like, well, that's not really bikepacking, because I'm not stopping and I'm not camping. And then that, it kind of snowballed from there and got more out of control, I would say.
That's really interesting that you've come in from that cycling background. So you must have a base skill and fitness level from all that riding you've done there, Alan.
I think so. It's easy for me to decide to figure that I can always improve, or I need to be better, because every time I go out I'm like, oh, I could have done that better. But I think you're right, there is definitely a base there, because I've always, as long as I can remember, except for that year and a half being extremely lazy, I've always ridden.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I envy that skill level because I come in from a mountaineering climbing background. This is just another way of journeying through the mountains. So I very often, well, I don't fall off, but it doesn't flow as well as it might do. I'm probably not the only listener who's not quite sure who Mike Hoare is. You've mentioned Mike Hoare a couple of times there. Just tell us a little bit about Mike Hoare.
Yeah, so there's people out there that know a lot more about him than myself. But he set the record for riding around the world. And on that ride, he was like, not everyone can do this. Not everyone can just take however long off and ride around the world. So he wanted to create something a bit more holiday-like, but still extremely grueling, which was the Transcontinental, which is the road stuff. At the time, it was starting to, I was on that crossover from road to mountain, and that's how I started finding out a bit more about him. And he's just a super inspirational guy. He was apparently super humble and was just, everything that came out of his mouth was just words of wisdom. There's a lot of nice Mike Hoare quotes on the internet. And even the Dales Divide, Mike Hoare's mother starts and goes there each and every year to set the race off. Wow. Because Mike sadly passed away in a crash in the Indian Pacific Wheel race during a collision. So yeah, that was extremely, like, it set the whole community back a big step. But there's been a lot of good that's come from it, like lots of continuation of the TCR and like Sir Dales Divide and many other events as well. Like I said, there's going to be people out there that know a lot more than myself about him. But yeah, he's just, that one picture was enough to get me going.
Sounds like you're inspired by him, and in the same way, Alan, you're inspiring people today. So I'm going to ask you about routes and events and things, but first of all, and this is hard for me not being a cyclist through and through, but everybody wants to know about your bike. What bike do you choose? How do you choose that bike? And I notice you're on a hardtail, aren't you? Front suspension, like myself. Presumably you've chosen not to ride a gravel bike. So how have you chosen the bike you've got, and what's so good about it?
Well, it's funny you should say I've chosen not to ride a gravel bike, but that's how I started, because until I got the mountain bike, I had to start using my gravel bike. And it's not my most funnest of bikes, to be fair. I'm not into the drop handlebars, I'm not into the skinny tires, but I was smashing that around the Lake District. And I eventually decided I wanted a 3-inch three-inch tired compatible bike. So I was looking, I kept on finding Surly bikes left, right and center, and it's like, okay, could go for a Surly with suspension fork. And then all of a sudden I found this bike that I'm riding now, which is a Hunt. A lot of people get mixed up and think it's actually a from Hunt Wheels, but it's not. It's Dan Hunt from Australia. He's made the Hunt 1000, which is a self-supported 1,000-kilometer bikepacking race, and there was nothing that ticked any boxes for him. So he designed this bike, and I just managed to come across, and I'm like, that'll take a 124, that'll take a 3-inch tire. Happy days. It's steel as well, so yeah, it's a 2015, and it's still going strong, and it's now on about 8,000k, 9,000k, something like that.
That sounds really, really wise to me, Alan, because I've come in, I did some mountain biking off season and then came into it that way. So for me, a hardtail was the obvious way to go. But I've always been tempted by a gravel bike, and a lot of people listening will think bikepacking is about gravel biking. But actually, what you're saying there is, to get the full value of the routes you're talking about, a mountain bike works better.
Yeah, I mean, you always wish that you're on something else. When it snows, you wish you're on a fat bike. When you're pushing up like Balak Dub, like I did at the start of the month, I wish I had a gravel bike because that's a lot lighter.
Yeah.
There's always going to be something that's better. at certain points. But for myself, it just makes sense for a steel Hardtail 29er, really.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I think it's always a compromise, isn't it? But with a mountain bike, we'll do anything a gravel bike will do, whereas a gravel bike might struggle sometimes to do some of the things you do on your mountain bike.
Exactly, yeah. But then, you know, like vice versa, you know, it's trade-offs, isn't it? You've got to find what's more important.
It is. I find myself riding along sometimes thinking, I'm not in a rush. I can just pootle along with these fat tires. It's fine. So baggage. I mean, I've gone through all sorts of reiterations of baggage, and there'll be somebody somewhere doing a YouTube video saying, this is how you must load your bike. You must have got it wrong and changed it and evolved it. What top tips would you have for baggage on your bike?
That's a real tough one, because it's really personal. If you're using a different brand, like there's many brands out there, and they're very, very good brands as well. I don't get on with some brands, and some brands work very well for me. I think realistically, if you can borrow any kit from anybody, that's probably the best thing to do first. But I managed to find Ace Pack pretty soon on, and that's a brand that are from Poland, and they make affordable, good stuff. The saddle bags don't shift around, the handlebar harnesses don't move around, everything else just works, and I'm still on the same kit that I bought years ago. So if you can borrow some kit from somebody, find out what works, if it works at all, and then just basically go from there.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it, getting it right? And that's interesting when you talk about the sway. I moved away from the saddle bag because of the sway. You reckon this Ace Pack doesn't sway? You've got it sorted.
Yeah, no, it seems to be very, very, very solid. Like, you know, there's times where you've got to like adjust any setup that you've got.
Yeah.
But it seems to just absolutely work really well.
Well, that's brilliant. And people can obviously see your bike and the way you load it on the videos, can't they, Alan?
Yeah, yeah.
So what about the routes? How do you choose where to go?
So that tends to come from like different routes that I've done in the past, from like sort of the Badger Divide, you know, routes that are like predefined and official sort of routes. I usually get a bit of an idea of what I'm going to do for future adventures based on the adventure that I'm actually already on. So the Highland Trail. My friend Barry went out on the middle loop, and I was like, this is really, really nice. I like this. And then it took a few years to get back up there, and I'm like, well, I wouldn't mind doing the southern loop, but I could do a little bit of this part, and then I can go and see this section. So that's how one part of my mind works, as what adventures I'm going on. And then the other adventures are like, because I do a lot of riding in Mid Wales and do a lot of riding in the Lake District, you tend to start learning the areas quite well. And the Yorkshire Dales as well are starting to become quite familiar to myself. So you start, you figure out where you want to park, and then you figure out where you want to get to. And then I just tend to choose what bridleways can take me there. Sometimes they're not the best bridleways in the world, and sometimes they are, and it's all about the adventure of not knowing where the route is going to take you, basically, from point A to point B.
So you embrace the uncertainty of the bridleways, do you? Do you look at them on the Ordnance Survey map and say, well, there's a bridleway, I'll see if it goes?
Basically, yeah. So like there's a lot of bridleways where I'm like, I have no idea, that's a green lane. I don't know whether if it's going to be like Strata Florida in Mid Wales, which I never want to see ever again. And by that laugh, I figured that you're sort of quite familiar with that place.
I know where you are, and there's a really good descent to Strata Florida from the Tyvee Pools, but there's a really bad route across from Clairwyn Reservoir, isn't there?
That's the route that we got sent on the Bare Bones 200, which is that Bare Bones bikepacking that tend to do the 200 kilometer individual time trial route, and that's yeah
Much more sensible to go further north and then come south, I think, on that one. But you know, it depends what you're doing, doesn't it, on the day. And unless you go and have a look, you don't know, do you?
Yeah.
I do think it's quite interesting when you look at a map, and if you see a road, then you can probably drive along it. Whereas if you see a bridleway, you've got no idea, have you?
Yeah, it could be an absolute nightmare. It really can. And sometimes it is. It just happens. Part of the adventure, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's interesting to use the Ordnance Survey map as well, because a lot of people will have moved to things like Komoot and Ride Your Bike. I can't remember the name of it. There just seems to be so many of these apps now.
There is a lot.
Planning routes. Do you use a mix, a combination of things?
I did used to use a lot of the big route and app groups, but after a couple of misadventures, I decided just to start putting it straight onto OS maps, basically, because their snap to route is working a lot better in national parks now.
Yeah.
Whereas different apps out there think there's a route.
Yeah,
there's not always a route, and you know, if you're 100k into a 200k trip, and you've got to go through a bridleway that they think is there, but OS maps say it isn't there. That's when it gets interesting. But yeah, it's mostly OS maps that I use.
Yeah, big shout out for OS maps. I sometimes use them on the Outdoor Active app as well, but all survey maps in whatever form you use them are brilliant, aren't they?
Yeah.
Do you have any favourite routes, Helen? Any that you look back and go, yes, that was amazing?
I guess, like, to answer that, yeah, it's got to be my Iceland trip with Barry.
Oh, yeah.
That still is probably one of the most exciting places that I've ever been to. And if I have to choose just one route out of umpteen routes, it's got to be that one.
Wow.
It's just absolutely out of this world.
And is that because of the landscape, or because of the, you know, the circumstance, the company, the you know, was it just a good holiday with good weather?
I wouldn't say good weather, but yes to all of that, yeah. I would say. It was like a constant 9 degrees in the day, back when, you know, England was having its hottest summer. I was sat in a square with all of my layers on, and I had a woolly hat on as well. And it was just the colours of the landscape, the sparseness of everything, the fact that I didn't see anybody around. Yeah, it was incredible.
Sounds good. And was it easy enough for transport to get there? You flew there, presumably.
Yeah, we actually flew from Luton. It was very, very easy. I've travelled on a bike quite a bit in the past.
Yeah.
And that was just as easy, to be fair. I was worried about building the bike at the end. I was just more worried that it would actually turn up, so I bought an AirTag and made sure that it was on the plane.
Oh, wow.
That was the only thing I was worried about.
But most of your routes are in, as you said before, Wales, England, Scotland.
Yep.
You must like those places.
Yeah, it's quite easily accessible. You know, it's, you know, about an hour and a half away from Lake District, 2.5 hours from Mid Wales, about an hour and a bit away from Yorkshire Dales. So it's the accessibility that I like. If I had my own way, every single weekend I'd be up in the Highlands or the Cairngorms, or I'd be in Dumfries and Galloway, which is one of my most more like favorite places that is easily accessible, being Scottish. So yeah, there's a lot of decent routes around, a lot of good places.
Great spoiled for choice, aren't we?
Yes.
You must have had a few epics, Alan. Are there any that stand out in mind? Any that lessons might be learned that we could pass on to listeners?
I guess it took me a little while to learn how to river cross properly. I've learned that white water, don't go by.
No.
Dark water, don't go by. You know, just leave it for another day. On the Highlands trip, on one of my videos, I might actually take a bit of a dunk and the whole bike goes under and I go face first into the water, because I was trying to battle across, because we spent like 2 hours trying to cross the Strath, and it was in Spey, and a lot of lessons learned that day is like always go further upstream. It can be pretty dangerous
as well, can't it? Moving water. I have seen somebody trapped under the bike with the current pushing the bike onto the leg, and we had to get in and help them out.
It is scary stuff.
I tend to advise people to keep the bike downstream in case that happens, so they don't get trapped if they slip. But
yep, exactly.
Okay. So a lot of people want to know about the filming, and it boggles my mind actually, Alan, how you do it, because you're on your own, aren't you?
Majority, so, yeah.
Why did you start doing that? And you know, how do you do it?
Why is more just to show people that you can do it. You can go out there and you can be just you and go out and have an adventure, you know, and hopefully, like, looking back on stuff that I've done, I can have some sort of sense of accomplishment, because initially the videos were only for myself. You know, I had them all private and I didn't really even put my name to it. I had like a pseudonym and like a random name. And I didn't want to have any identity to it. And then one of my videos, I tried to share it and they were like, oh, I can't see it because it's not public. So I put it public, they seen it, like, and then it got a couple of views and like got a few like sort of comments and stuff, and I thought, oh, that's nice. So I thought, well, I'll just do it for me and I'm going to stop at some point. I'll just do a couple and I'll stop. And then it just sort of snowballed from there. And I guess the how I do it is more like to keep, I only really use a phone and a drone now. I don't have a GoPro anymore because there's just too much faff. The files are too big to deal with and switching out memory cards. So I literally carry an iPhone in my pocket that I can just pull out and film as I'm riding along. If I decide that I want to, you know, tell the story of what's happening around me, I've got it there. And then if I get send the drone up, I usually use that as my lunch, a snack break.
Oh yeah.
So I'll be munching away on something whilst I'm sending the drone up, because it takes 10 minutes to get it up in the sky, film something if it's interesting, eat my food, then drop it down again. And then the third sort of ingredient, if you will, is just to do four sort of big setup shots. So phone on a tripod, chuck it up on a hill and ride past it, then go and get the
phone. That's a bit, getting back for it.
Yeah, which is a bit of a faff, to be fair, but you know, that's my sort of approach.
But you have a plan there, don't you, by the sounds of it? You know what you're going to do. You're going to do that ride past, do some pieces to camera, do the drone shot.
Yeah, I never know what the end result is going to be. I never know what the story is going to be. I never know what's going to happen. And that keeps me engaged in doing it, I guess. Because when I start riding, I'm like, you know, I'll say who I am and what I'm doing. Sometimes if it's a bigger sort of route, and if I say I'm doing this, then it usually goes wrong. And then I've got to make some sort of different plans. But I know the sort of methodology behind it of how each day is, and I'm like, I need to get this shot for myself. I need to get that shot for myself, because if I ride past that, I won't see that again for a while. So yeah, it's
You must spend quite a bit of time editing and adding music and that sort of thing. Is that really time consuming?
Yeah, it can be. Luckily, I really quite enjoy editing.
Yeah.
I think because I switched from, I was using whatever Apple had, like iMovie or whatever it was, I was using that to start off with.
Yeah.
And then I'd done a couple of videos with Final Cut Pro, whatever it was. And then, My trial expired, and I was like, £300 is a lot of money. And then I got a text to say, try DaVinci Resolve. It's free. I'm like, that's the right price to pay, free. So I use that now. But to start off with, I went into that and then edited Iceland, which took, I can't even remember, like 90 hours, between 50 and 90 hours. I can't remember how long it took to actually edit. And now it doesn't take that long at all, really.
You got it. So that people don't see all that, do they? I know it takes a lot of time. What have you, is one film that's your most satisfying film? Is there one film where you've just come back and gone, oh, I love that. That's just worked exactly how I wanted it.
Do you know, it's probably not what people are going to expect me to say, but it's literally the 30 odd second trailer for the Iceland film.
Oh yeah,
I'm really satisfied with that. I don't know why. Yeah. I keep on going back to it and just watching it because it's, I just like it. It's weird. Yeah. It's the shortest video that I've got.
Well, they are good films, Alan. I'm not just saying that because I'm talking to you, but you know, I sit and watch YouTube quite a bit, and a lot. I just don't get past the first minute. But yourself and a couple of others, yeah, I can't wait for your next film.
Thank you.
It's great. So would you have any top tips for other bikepackers? So, you know, there's a lot of people just getting into it now, aren't they? Quite new to it. And they're grabbing tips from all over the place.
Yeah.
You know what you're talking about. You've been there, done this. What advice would you give new bikepackers?
It's quite a big question.
It is a big question.
I'm assuming that if you want to start off, you've literally got your bike and you don't know what else to pick. I would say if you're really interested in doing it, like don't cheap out and get, oh, I'll just get this sleeping bag or I'll just get this like tent or something. It might take a couple of months longer to save up and get a warm sleeping bag. But like, I guess the one main sort of point I'm trying to make is just buy right the first time. You know, go for something middle of the road. You don't have to spend like £700 on a sleeping bag or something, but if you're warmer and you've got good kit to be able to return and go out again, you know, there's a higher likelihood of that. And a lot of people seem to think that they need a specific bike packing bike. The bicycle industry is very difficult because there's a lot of options out there, and the way the marketing works is very sort of driven. Like, this is a gravel bike, but this is a fast gravel bike. This is an aero gravel bike. This is a mountain bike. This is a bike packing bike. It can get out of hand. There's a saying that, you know, the best bike that you've got to go bike packing on is the one that you've already got. And if you've already got a bike, you're most of the way there. Just get yourself a nice warm sleeping bag, decent tent, and you don't even need all the best bags in the world. You don't need to go out and spend £700 on, you know, the latest whatever. You know, you can literally chuck it all in the backpack and ride off.
Yep. And the people, you've just got to go for it at some point, haven't you? What if it rains all the time though? What happens then?
What if it's been raining all the time since last year, hasn't it?
It has, rather.
That's one that I actually struggle with quite a lot, because when I can be cold, I can be wet, but if I'm cold and wet, I fall to bits.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind admitting that at all, because, you know, I'm human.
I think that's normal, Alan.
Yeah. if I always try to take my own advice of just trying to keep on moving whilst it's cold and whilst it's wet, but it's very difficult to do that, especially if you know you're coming up to a town and then you start thinking about your options, like, I might just bail, I might just go home. That's fine, go home if you really want to go home, or try and turn it around, go to a cafe, warm up, put some of your sleep stuff on whilst you're in a cafe and try and come up with a plan B. One of my trips that I was riding to Dent Houses Bothy in Yorkshire, I decided to, as I was most of the way there, I knew I was still about 3.5 hours away from it. I got to the Station Inn pub. I wasn't enjoying it. I wasn't happy. I was freezing cold, but it wasn't wet. So I was fine, but I just wasn't enjoying it. So I just sat there and sent a few text messages around, you know, a few friends, and like, guys, not enjoying it. And, you know, like, just turn it around, do something that makes you have a lot more fun. I ended up having a beer or two, had a meal. The guy offered me a bunkhouse. I couldn't be bothered camping, so I stayed in the bunkhouse instead. Brilliant. So if it's all going wrong, if you can, stop in somewhere, get something to eat, and think about your options.
Because you make your own rules, don't you? There's no rule against staying in a pub or a hostel or something. It's a really sensible thing to do when you start getting wet and cold, isn't it?
Of course, yeah.
But you've got some bigger plans this summer, haven't you, where you probably won't be stopping in hotels. Tell us what you're doing at the end of May, Alan.
who knows, I might be stopping in hotels. I sent an application to enter the Highland Trial just before Christmas to Alan Goldsmith. And to my shock, he emailed back and was like, congratulations. I was like, is it congratulations, really? And he was like, I can offer you a place. So I've actually got onto the Highland Trial 550. It is a race. It will be competitive for myself. And I'm certainly not going to be at the pointy end. But it's still going to be 560 miles, I think, this year because of a slight diversion, unless a bridge is fixed. So that's basically starts in Tindrum. Yeah, I mean, you know this, and your listeners will know this as well from the previous podcasts. But starts off at Tindrum, should be all smiles, and by the time it finishes in Tindrum after the third loop, there mightn't be any smiles.
Have you got an idea of how long you want to do it in, or are you just going to go for it?
I think I'm just going to go for it because whilst you sat on the couch with a coffee, you feel really strong. You're like,
oh,
yeah. Okay, so I could do it in probably about 4 or 5 days. And then you're like, you ride your bike and then you're like, I can't do that in 4 or 5 days. So I was like, okay, maybe 6 to 8 days. And then the number 9 starts creeping in. Then I'm like, I'm just going to ride it. I've got time off from work. I can actually probably take 2 weeks to do it. I don't want to take 2 weeks to do it. I do want to cover some good mileage per day because I want to see it, but I also want to get back and try and enjoy some part of it as a holiday at the end when I'm finished. If I finish, I should say.
Oh, I'm sure 9 days is well doable. I did it in 2 weeks, 14 days, but I was on holiday, Alan, you know. One of the things about stopping in hostels or hotels is you don't get an early start. It's really noticeable. You lose a couple of hours in the morning when you stay somewhere.
Yeah, I'll bear that in mind if I decide to check in anyway, because I like a shower in the morning and a coffee and a watch of the TV. That ain't racing, is it?
But it is about the journey. It is about the journey. But you know that route. You know it's a tough route.
Yeah. I've not ridden the Northern Loop yet.
It's easy that bit.
I should say I've not walked the Northern route yet.
Yeah. Well, it's like the rest of it. There's some really, really good bits.
Yeah.
And some bits are not as good. Alan, I think we've covered our time now. We've both got other things to do this evening. No, is there anything else you want to add before we finish the podcast?
You put me on the spot now, haven't you?
No. I don't want to shut you up before and then you say, oh, well, I wish I'd said such and such.
No, I think your questions have covered pretty much everything that I think I've got to talk about. So yeah, thank you very much.
Well, on behalf of all the listeners, Alan, thanks for taking the time to chat with us. I know people really appreciate that. And best of luck with the 550.
I need it. Thank you so much.
See ya.
See you now. Bye bye.